just because we get around. Talking about my generation. Things they do look awful. Talking about my generation. I hope I die before I get old.
Every so often, there are major studies of generations. What caught our eye last month was the Pew Research Center findings about millennials born between 1981 and 2000, some in school, some are in the workforce. They are on their own path right now to adulthood. They are the most racially diverse generation in American history. They will change the face of America. 43% are non-white. It's the highest share of any generation. But while reading about the descriptions of the millennials, we started thinking about other generations, Gen X, the baby boomers, the World War II people, and we thought about a three-generation conversation to ask them all the big questions. What gives life meaning? Are they politically affiliated? What causes are near and dear to their hearts? Did the generation into which they were born help frame their decisions about marriage, about children, about occupations? So today we have three generations joining us on the program. A pre-baby boomer, a Gen Xer, and a millennial will be here to talk with each other about these major issues. One of our guests is on the cusp of the baby boomers, born in 1942. She was a very early and probably the first wave of Peace Corps volunteers. One is a member of Generation X, born between 1966 and 1980. Baby boomers was 46 to 64. And one, Generation Y or millennial, born between 1981 and 2000. In our Madison studios today, Judy Reed. Judy is a returned Peace Corps volunteer, 1964 to 1966. She's had a very active and busy life. She graduated from the University of Oklahoma in 1964, joined the Peace Corps, served as a teacher in a small village in Liberia, and then she earned a master's degree in journalism from Northwestern. She has worked as a reporter for the Delta Democrat Times in Greenville, Mississippi, and mind you, this was in the 1960s. I'm sure she has some stories to tell about that particular time. And she has also worked in Madison, and she moved there after Mississippi. She worked at UW Extension, served on the Dane County Board of Supervisors, was chair of the Dane County Commission on Aging, active in the League of Women Voters, and also a PTO president. Judy, thank you so much for just putting yourself here and having what should be a really good hour with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen. Yeah. I'm glad to be here.
Were you actually, you must have been the very first wave of Peace Corps volunteer, weren't you?
I think so. When I finished serving the Peace Corps in 1966, I noticed that there had been 15,000 volunteers. But when I joined, I imagine it was under 1,000.
Mm-hmm. Why did you do that? That was a big thing to do.
It was. If you're right about baby boomers and they want to save the world, that's one thing I read about baby boomers. I think I somewhat wanted to save the world, and I had been very impressed by Kennedy. I was very excited when they formed the Peace Corps, and my senior year in college, I thought, this is what I really want to do. And I'd majored in elementary education. I wasn't really sure I wanted to do that right away in the U.S., and so I signed up, and somewhat to the chagrin of my parents, who were, you know, worried about my future and my health, et cetera. But then they became very enthusiastic later. But I was very glad that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us. Kevin Mullen is also in our studios in Madison from, I don't know how many of you have ever considered this hour, you're from a generation. He's from Generation X. He grew up in the 1980s and the 90s in Evanston, Illinois. He's a dissertator in the English department at UW-Madison and an instructor for the Writing Fellows Program and the UW Odyssey Project. Kevin, thank you so much for being with us as well. Do you identify, baby boomers, I think, identify fairly strongly with the baby boom generation. Do you identify as yourself, if not out loud to yourself, as a Generation Xer?
You know, it's a funny question because after I was asked to be on the show, I asked some of my friends what they thought about being a Gen Xer. And the first reaction that most of them had was, are we Gen Xers? So I think there's a slightly less defined category around it, and I think a little bit less of a I don't know, joining mentality for a lot of the people in my generation, that they don't automatically recognize themselves as Gen Xers, but then when they read about the description, they think, yeah, that kind of fits.
Interesting. You know? In our Milwaukee studios today is Jabril Farage. He's a millennial. He attended Riverside High School here in Milwaukee, and he graduated also from Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism in 2010. He works as a freelance journalist and a storyteller, and he is... It's a big thing, writing his first novel. Thank you, Jabril, for being with us. Your first novel.
Yeah. Started beginning of last year while I was still working full-time. My first job out of school at a social media agency here in Milwaukee, and was able to write in spare time. I just finished my first draft a few weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Actually.
That's wonderful. And do you consider yourself a millennial? Have you ever described yourself like that?
I think us millennials have been told that we're millennials. you know, we love to categorize in society, and I think we've heard over and over again, you're millennials. But I think at this point we're finally kind of maybe not finally but taking ownership of that, and you know, people have said a lot of things about millennials, and I think we're ready to say, hey, there are some other things going on than maybe what, you know, has been said up to this point.
And you are coming into your own. Your generation is just beginning to reach adulthood and going into adulthood. This is your time to be whatever you're going to be, right?
Yeah, I think finally you know, a lot of us I myself graduated in 2010, so we're in the middle of the Great Recession, and we've had a lot of different experiences coming out of school. I myself didn't have a job like some of my, you know, some of my fellow graduates. I ended up coming back here to Milwaukee, and yes, I lived at home for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's been said over and over about millennials. You know, they're living in their parents' basements. And
it's
all
okay.
This kind of stuff.
It's okay.
Right.
It's
right.
Okay.
But you know, I think the time that all of this is kind of coming up and we're graduating, you know, it makes sense that we're moving back in, and you know, maybe able to get our feet under ourselves a little bit before then going out. It's not like we don't want to be able to support ourselves and do something that we love and are passionate about. So,
Judy, you mentioned, and I'm a baby boom generation as well, also inspired. I was in Vista for a couple of years and caught up in the whole 60s time. I want to ask each of you this question. Judy said something interesting, that she felt inspired by a president of the United States, that Kennedy inspired her with doing something to make a difference in the world, and that you also felt that perhaps it was your mission in life to save the world. You've had a very interesting trajectory in your life experience, which falls along the path of trying to make the world a better place. What were the issues that inspired you? Where did that motivation come from to continue your life's work of trying to make the world a better place?
I was thinking about this earlier today, how I came back from the Peace Corps and then went from there. I'm not really certain, Kathleen. I think that perhaps in my childhood, my parents took us to the Methodist Church, and I think it had a big impression on me. And not so much, I didn't want to preach the gospel or anything, but the humanitarian aspects of that. And I think that that had just stayed with me over the years, and that this obligation to society to try to do something useful.
Mm-hmm. And what about for the Gen X generation? Probably of all of these generations, Kevin, your generation has been taking the worst rap here, that you've been called slackers and all you cared about was making
money.
Well,
but I think we've all been called slackers at one point, haven't we?
There you go. You got a really good point. And worse, right? I'm sure that's true. But definitions of your generation have changed. Is there a defining political event that happened, a world event that happened, that inspired you to be a writer, that inspired your generation and will define always your generation?
Well, that's a good question, Kathleen. One of the big, of course, events that happened as my generation was growing up or hitting adolescence was the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Mm.
And I think that one of the ways in which that impacted us was just the thought that if you were going to change the world, if you were going to make an impact on things, you would have to do so outside of an institution, that it was more about kind of freedoms and you know, groups of people, of course, but not necessarily ones that were totally monolithic in their approach to things or totally ideological, but much more expressions of personal freedom and growth. So I think that would be one event that I think really did impact us. And then, of course, the first Iraq War, I think, also made a pretty big impact, too. It made us more distrustful of the U.S. government, I think. I know that when I finished college, I had thought about joining the Peace Corps. But there was something about the fact that it was a representative of the U.S. government that at that particular point made me slightly uncomfortable.
Oh, that's
so I was able to teach English outside of the States, but I did so through organizations that I was able to locate on my own.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so I think that might be a bit of a shift there, is this feeling as though joining together into one big strategy or one big approach isn't necessarily the answer.
Mm-hmm. And Jabril, for your generation, it's always been 9/11 has been described as the event of your generation. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, definitely. That was our, you know, Kennedy being shot or our Berlin Wall. If you talk to anyone my age, we all remember where we were. A lot of us were at school, and I myself was homeschooled, and we sat in front of the TV at home. But there were a lot of people who, you know, in schools, they turned all the TVs on and you know, didn't have classes that day. And I think that's really what everyone remembers. I think, you know, what we kind of were able to take from that experience was the extraordinary ways that people came together in the immediate aftermath of those events, and just some of the great stories, you know, that come out of that day, that, you know, people helping each other, not caring about their own well-being, but the well-being of others. But then we can also see, you know, moving past that, how we really didn't live out those values in the longer-term aftermath, and how we've, I think, really been able to see that the way that event was used in this country was not necessarily a positive one, and that I think, you know, I can say this confidently, that the Al-Qaeda achieved what they set out to that day. They made us a lot more scared, to the point where we gave up a lot of liberties, things that I think we'd taken for granted, and that I think we gave up a little bit too easily.
Hmm.
You know, in terms of talking about inspiration, I think you can also say that we were greatly inspired by President Obama.
Yes.
And that election was something where a lot of young people came together and really, you know, it was the themes of hope and mm-hmm. change, and really something, you know, tangible. We were really excited about that, and I think we've also felt the aftermath of being a little bit let down by that message of change and hope, and that, you know, maybe they're within the structures that we have in politics today, that change wasn't necessarily as possible as we thought it was.
Very interesting. Judy, do you feel let down?
In the same regard that he mentioned, but it's funny that he mentioned President Obama, because I didn't mention earlier, Kathleen, but one follow-up from being in the Peace Corps, when I retired, I went back to Liberia.
Oh.
And they'd had many wars for, you know, for years, and they had just elected a new woman president, and they still had about 10,000 UN troops there. But I just was desperate, or not desperate, just anxious to visit some of my former students. And so a friend of mine, Jane Scherer, and I went and just had a great time. We found about 15 students, and we talked, and we just saw how really hard the country had been hit. So when we came back, we started a nonprofit, and we couldn't, while we were there, we couldn't really figure out what we could do, but we focused on education, and one of the first things we did was to build a school, and the name of the school is the Barack Obama International Development, International Foundation School. They named it the full length of that. But he had just been inaugurated, and they offered to name it for my friend and me, but we said, oh, no, don't do that. And then we got to all thinking and saying, well, you know, he's just been inaugurated, and they really wanted that name. You know, his father was from Africa, and so it seemed like a good choice. And so I have not been disappointed in the president. I agree that I've been very disappointed with the fact that so many things get blocked by needing supermajority votes in the legislative bodies.
Mm-hmm. You really have carried on with your activism, haven't you? That's quite a remarkable story. Keeping hope alive, yeah. Right? Yeah. Here's your life.
I just got back. We went in 2007, and just last month, we went back. We had never seen the school, and so we went back and to see, and it turned out quite nice.
Very nice.
You know, and I think I can echo that a little bit, too. I wouldn't say necessarily let down by the president. There have been some policies that I've agreed with that I think have done good things, and some that I think have not, you know, been as great. But it is that general feeling of, well, even if, you know, we have this desire and this drive to make things happen, that, like I said, within the structures, that change isn't really as easy as we might have thought it was.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Kevin, let me ask you, let's turn to money issues here for a moment. We'll take a pause, and then I'd like to give each of you a chance to question each other about your generation. You all seem to get along just fine. There are no generational divides
so
here,
far.
Which is good. So, maybe there will be a point where there won't be. Kevin, has it been hard for you? You're in adulthood, well in adulthood now. Has it been difficult? We keep hearing about how young people in your generation and in Jabril's generation as well have really had to can't quite find the job market, maybe did something they didn't want to do, maybe had to do two jobs because the economy hasn't been good for them. Is that true? Is it hard for your generation, Gen Xers, or not?
Well, I think it definitely is. I think there's some overlap, especially, you know, when a lot of Gen Xers finished college, it was the early 90s where there was also a recession as well. So there have been a lot of bumps along the way. And I know a lot of friends of mine who have, you know, kind of amassed a certain amount of money and then lost it and then found themselves in situations where they couldn't quite afford the kind of house that they thought they'd be able to afford. My personal experience is a little bit different simply because I'm in graduate school right now and have been for the last 6 or 7 years, working on my PhD. So it hasn't – this recent financial collapse hasn't affected me as much. But I've talked to a lot of friends who are finding themselves not in the position – they're finding themselves with families and responsibilities that they thought they would have, but not necessarily with the kind of means that they thought that they'd have to rely on.
Was it a goal in your life to make money? A pretty
not
good amount?
Not so much. Not so much.
Okay.
For me personally, it was much more about amassing certain kinds of experiences. And I'm, you know, very much into literature and to travel and kind of, especially in my early 20s, so my life is a bit of an adventure, right? So I did travel and teach and fell in love with teaching and have pursued that as a career. But money has never really been at the top of my list. And I don't think that that's indicative of an entire generation, but I do think that there is – I'm not an anomaly either. I do have a lot of friends who have prioritized other things beyond, you know, material ones.
Judy, how about you? I would imagine you would agree and your life is the same. Money, not a huge priority.
Correct. Although it was very important to my parents and they wanted it to be important
too.
To me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the only one that sort of varied at all from the three children. My brother became a IBM employee. My sister did computer work as well. And yet my own children are Generation Xers, so I have a lot of feeling about those people too. And I totally agree with what Kevin just said. You still have to have some money to survive. Mm-hmm. And both of my daughter and her husband are both lawyers, and yet – and so they make a good income, better than my husband and I made at their ages, much better. And yet they could not afford the same house we bought in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Today they can't afford that same house, even though they have better jobs and better incomes. So I think I really sympathize with the Generation Xers because it's just not going to be as easy for them to survive financially. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't need much. I mean, I could stay home with the kids when they were little because we didn't need a second income, even though my husband was only – he was only a social worker.
Right.
So and yet that was enough to take care of us for a while.
Yeah. You make me think because in our household there were huge arguments about – my parents were Depression-era parents and had to flip hamburgers and not go to college and moved us out to the suburbs where every third house looked alike. And and the schools were good, but it was very white and it was very removed. And then we went through the 60s and, oh, my gosh, if I had been my parents, what happened to me and my brother would have appalled me. me. I mean, we just went, woo, we went as far as we could from that life. Yeah. And I was thinking, poor mom and dad, they really were trying to do the best that they could. But we had huge fights about war, about money, about the length of hair, et cetera. What about you? Do you, and let's talk to our younger people here. Do you get along, Jabril and Kevin, pretty well with your parents? Are there generational differences?
I would say there is. There have been some political discussions in our house as well, which is interesting to me considering the way that we grew up. You know, my my mom was a single mother, at times worked three jobs to support us, and we were never well off. So the political affiliations that she holds for certain reasons, you know, I take issue with sometimes, and we've had those discussions even as recently as around 2010 when I was living at home for a little while. There was also a certain race going on here in Wisconsin that we were on different sides.
Oh, really? So, governor's race. No, that's interesting. Yes. Oh, yes. Very interesting.
You know, I think we've at this point, though, maybe been able to come to terms on some things. I think it's important, you know, when we have these discussions, though they can become heated, and, you know, especially within family, to be able to find that common ground that we all hold within the arguments, and that we can talk about our positions without getting, you know, too personally invested in them, although we obviously are, because it's important to talk about those intricacies. And there are a lot, you know, a lot more things that we all hold in common, I think. You know, I think that holds constant across the board. I think there are a lot more things that we have in common that we have, you know, that are different from each other. But we just accentuate those differences so much more often than the commonality.
Oh, how interesting that is. How about you, Kevin? Do you get along intergenerationally?
I certainly do. Actually, I'm pretty lucky. You know, my parents were kind of graduating college in the late 60s, and we had different political viewpoints between the two of them. My mom was a lot more on the kind of hippie side. She was going to protest the Vietnam War, while my father was a Marine in the Vietnam War.
Oh, my goodness.
So what's kind of, I think, come out of that, though, is that they have been very supportive and accepting as I've made decisions that weren't necessarily run-of-the-mill decisions. You know, I finished college and then went and taught English in Bulgaria for a year.
Oh.
And yet I never felt as though they were worried about that, or I felt nothing but support with them. They kind of understood where I was coming from, even if they hadn't made similar decisions in their own life.
Hmm.
And it's always been very kind of supportive and I think understanding that maybe I had a little bit more freedom growing up than they did growing up in the 50s. And so that the fact that I was taking advantage of that freedom, I think they saw as being worthy of being valuable.
Mm. And Judy, how about with your children? Do you communicate pretty freely? Are there certain issues that you just can't believe that they're living a life that's so different than yours, or is that not the case?
I don't think it's the case. They both live in Madison, and I think we're very much on the same political wave.
Mm.
They could slightly be more liberal than I am. I don't know if that's possible, but it might be. But they listen to music I don't like, and I don't understand or can even, you know, hear it very well. But I think we're pretty much on the same page.
We're going to weave a little bit of music. We'll play a song that maybe you don't understand very well,
maybe
too.
I'm
now that you just said that, let me get one of those songs. We're going to play a little music going in and out of our conversations here. We're having an intergenerational conversation this hour, and I'm having a great time. I hope you are as well. I'd like for them, and we'll ask them to feel free to ask each other questions as we continue. We have people here from the millennial generation. Jabril Farage is here. He attended Riverside High School in Milwaukee. He graduated from Northwestern Medill School of Journalism. So did our baby boom, or just before baby boom guest this hour. He works as a freelance journalist. Kevin Mullen is from Gen X, grew up in the 80s and 90s in Evanston. He's a dissertator in the English department at UW. W. Madison, has taught overseas, and he's an instructor for the Writing Fellows Program. And also joining us is Judy Reed. And Judy was in the very first Peace Corps group, 1964 to 1966, graduated from the University of Oklahoma, got a master's in journalism from Northwestern, worked as a reporter for the Delta Democrat Times in Mississippi, and moved to Madison, worked at UW Extension, Dane County Board of Supervisors, and chair of the Dane County Commission on Aging. We'll be welcoming phone calls. As you can see, we're having a different kind of show, but we do welcome phone calls. Do you have thoughts about different generations? Maybe you have comments about the generation that you were a part of and whether or not there were certain events that took place that defined what your values were. If there are some generations that you simply can't understand, if you think baby boomers really are self-indulgent and millennials don't have a clue and Gen Xers want to make money, whatever, you know, put the stereotypes on the table, that's okay too. But there is something to be said for defining ourselves in the generation. Oh, we did that in the office, and man, everybody had, oh yeah, this song, that song, and they all identify with a certain generation. And old me, I didn't even know some of these songs. So call us, okay? 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. We're playing a little music. Can you believe I'm saying this right now on Wisconsin Public Radio? A little bit of Vanilla Ice with Ice, Ice, Baby.
Felony, love it or leave it, you better gain weight. You better hit bullseye, the kid don't play. If there was a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the hook while my DJ revolves it.
You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
From 1968, the Beatles, and of course Revolution, and before we had our pause, you heard Vanilla Ice with Ice, Ice, Baby, which I kind of liked, actually. I haven't heard any of these songs ever before, but they were okay. Right. We're doing an intergenerational show this hour of the program, and we do want to tell you that coming up a little later, science and religion are often portrayed as being at odds with each other. Cynthia Schuster and Veronica Rickert's guest mathematician says there's room for both. Even the best scientific theories can't disprove the existence of God. That's Central Time coming up after 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let's take a few phone calls here, and we'll talk about music as well. Janice is a baby boomer. This is a great way to identify people. Hi, Janice, the baby boomer.
Hi, I am a baby boomer. And my son growing up, he's now in his middle 30s, but growing up, he always criticized me or whatever you want to call it, because he always told me that my generation, the baby boomers, only cared about money and only cared about material things. Ooh. And he went on and on and on. And I said, well, you have to have enough money to live. But I think he felt a sense of entitlement. He didn't necessarily think that you should have to go out and you should have to work all the time, but he still wanted the trips I took. He still wanted the kind of house I lived in. So I just felt, you know, and I don't think I raised him that way, although maybe to some degree I did, but I don't think baby boomers, to me, it's not as much as we're materialistic as, you know, you have to have money to live, and I've never had a lot of money, but I've always had enough money to pay my bills and take a couple of trips and live so that I'm, you know, I have a couple of dollars in the bank and not a lot. But I just found that interesting that he would want right. what I have and still say money wasn't important.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. What about the importance? Did we get everybody on this? Jabril, I don't know if we talked to you about money. Are you concerned about money? Is that the priority for you?
Well, and that's probably an interesting thing to start with. I think in terms of millennials, we've done a lot of what we were supposed to have done, right? I believe we're the most educated generation. A lot of people have bachelor's degrees. We've all gone, go to school, go to high school, go
right.
to college,
right.
And then we find ourselves out of college and in a situation where, well, maybe, you know, and I think for the most part we have had, I don't think it's been a strong pressure, but I think we definitely have had the kind of, go make money, you know, advance your career, that kind of message, you know, given to us. And I think a lot of what happened in the recession and you know, starting to graduate college and realizing that maybe we're not in the greatest position, you know, in terms of being able to find jobs or any of that, that we've had to rethink a little bit our direction. And, you know, a lot of that did involve, like I said, living at our parents' houses for a little while before we could find a job and get our feet under ourselves.
Sure.
And I think, you know, we're really looking for something more in our work. We want the money, but I think we want we need to see some, you know, and of course it's dangerous to make generalizations across the board, but I think we want to, you know, find some value in our work other than that money.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that in, you know, the millennials that I know every day, even if they have a full-time job, doing projects on the side,
mm-hmm.
pursuing passions. A lot of them have been able to find that job that is their passion. But, you know, I think there's a lot of searching still going on.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Janice. This one will go probably to Ellen. This is a lost generation, but I'm interested in your work working in Mississippi. So we'll get to that from Ellen's comment. Hi, Ellen.
Hello there. I'm calling because I am of the lost generation. And I'm kind of disappointed in my generation and everyone, actually, right now, because I remember I was in the 60s. I was in my 20s, and everybody was standing up for something. You had the lady that was went and volunteered,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's wonderful, but most of the rest of us were at least standing up holding a sign and saying, you know, civil rights, this, that, and the other thing,
mm-hmm.
And what about the Vietnam War?
Mm-hmm.
And now nobody's out in the streets saying anything, and that bothers me. And how come everybody that got old like I did turned into a conservative?
Oh, you're not a conservative now. That didn't happen. Okay, let's go to the baby boomer who's trying to change the world and has spent her life doing that with a response to this. Judy?
Well, I don't think I've changed either, but I don't know too many of my friends who have. I suppose if I'm disappointed, Ellen, today, it might be in the fact that there are fewer people volunteering to do things. But I do see baby boomers still volunteering as they retire to work in retirement centers, to work in schools. I have many friends who work in schools. So I see that. And I see them, you know, interested in issues of gay rights and the mm-hmm. environmental issues. But I agree with Ellen that you don't see people out on the streets much anymore. Although I must say, even though I went into the Peace Corps, my father would have died if I had been out. He told me one day, I don't want to see you out with a sign for civil rights in Oklahoma City.
Oh.
And so, I mean, he wasn't thrilled, of course, when I took the job in Mississippi.
I'm sure.
And met my husband, who was carrying a sign for Martin Luther King right after his death in a Martin Luther King march.
Mm.
And the police chief actually gave me that because he said the FBI had taken it during that march as a wedding gift. But anyway, so I do get disappointed that more people aren't involved. And if there's anything I do get disappointed with the Generation Xers or the Millenniums, I feel like they're not as involved as they should be. But at the same time, I have sympathy for them because if they're trying to raise a family or both people working, I really don't see how they can do very much. So there's just more stress in the world today, I think, than there was in our generation when we had time to do some of these things.
Yeah. Let's take on the issue of people of the country, because of what's happening demographically, will be growing into something entirely different by the time that you and I, Judy, are gone. And unfortunately, we won't be around to see it because it's going to take a little while. But this idea, and you'll have an interesting perspective on this, and let me start with Kevin on this, who hasn't talked for a while. I found this astounding. 43% of a country non-white, the highest rate of any generation. This is for the millennials right now. And they are not affiliated with political parties as people in my generation or earlier were. They're very socially engaged with Twitter and all of this. This whole country is going to be changing demographically in a very profound way, which seems to me as though it might change a whole lot of things. It's more your generation, I know, Jabril, but let's go to Kevin on this first. What does that figure mean to you, 43% millennials non-white?
Well, I think it's something that we kind of felt coming in the early 90s. I mean, I think a lot of times people think about Generation X and they think of grunge music, right, or kind of rock, and a lot of white dudes with long hair and plaid shirts. But there was also, you know, of course, hip-hop was getting big
yes,
at that time, too.
Yes.
So, I mean, it had a huge impact on me growing up. The high school that I went to was very diverse. It was pretty much kind of half white and half black. And there was a very strong sense of, in the early 90s, that these different kind of cultures were mixing, right? That there was a it wasn't like you were only hip-hop or you were only grunge. There was much more of a conversation being had. And a lot of the styles, like I remember Cross Colors was a big hip-hop style in the early 90s, and that was all about diversity. It was all about celebrating difference. And so I think it's something that my generation grew up with a little bit more comfortably, that there was this this sense that whiteness or being white was not really going to be the dominant kind of trait of our culture that or of our generation, that it was a much more – that our own self-identity when we look at ourselves was much more mixed
than when
we looked at the boomers.
When you think about – this is a profound change, and certainly when you think about the history of your life and the work that you did in Mississippi, et cetera, what do you make of that? That actually what it essentially may be the most important thing is for more of us to become not white.
I think it's a great thing. I often thought right after a recent election when the person I had wanted to win didn't win, one of my suggestions was to find a state where there was a large minority population and all you needed was a small number of white people to make a difference and get them together and start electing people that would support good issues. And I chose Mississippi because it's only about 27% black, I think, but with Hispanics and there are all 10 to 15 to 20% whites who are very liberal. I thought, well, that's made to be a good change in the country. Of course, Texas is becoming that model right now. I think it's going to be changed in the next few years.
Yeah.
So I'm all in favor of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Ellen, for the call. Let's go to Jacob, who's a millennial. Hi, Jacob.
Hi. How's it going?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good. Just on my way back from Brigham Young University.
Uh-huh.
Coming home for the break. I just like to say that, unlike the majority of millennials, I'm not thrilled at all with President Obama. And I don't identify well with my generation. I'm more of a baby boomer generation. I'm pretty conservative. I like 1950s values. I don't support gay rights or feminism or any causes like that. And I just think we get a bad rap for being ultra-liberal, and I would just like to testify that we're not all that way. Some of us are still church-going, traditional Americans.
Hmm. All right. Well, I think traditional Americans is up for grabs, whatever traditional
also seeing, is. I think we're also seeing more liberal Christians, too,
yes,
you know, in this day and age. So I don't think it is hard to generalize, I think. You know, just in terms of I want to go back to the diversity a little bit,
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe this will address some of what we're talking about here, too. But it's something that's unavoidable, and it's something that I don't know if you guys saw, but I think National Geographic just came out with something,
mm-hmm.
You know, saying this is essentially what the average American is going to look like
yes.
in 2050.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was a mixed-race person.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that's just kind of indicative of the change that's happening in terms of people, you know, there are more marriages happening in mixed race couples and all of that. And, you know, it just goes to, I think it's a very good thing, as Judy said, because I think we're being exposed to more perspectives and more cultures, and maybe, you know, hopefully as this trend continues, we'll all be able to you know, understand each other a little bit more. You know, when I hear that, for example, you know, someone in my generation,
Jacob,
is not, you know, isn't in support of these movements that are really, you know, happening right now. Feminism has been happening. I think that talks to a rather, you know, a lack of empathy. And I think that's something that's going to be really important moving forward. You know, I talked earlier in this hour about being able to find our commonalities and not become fixated on our differences. And I think that's going to be really important. And I think we're seeing, you know, the fruits of that right now.
Yeah. More phone calls in a moment. Thank you, Jacob, for your call. We have a full bank of phone lines. We're doing an intergenerational show after reading the latest Pew report about what are millennials really like. And some of these reports are really fascinating because I think they're right on mark with a number of things to describe what political allegiances are, what the causes are. But, of course, there are – you can't generalize about all generations except for the music, right? Of course, the baby boomer music was the best. I mean, how can you beat the Beatles and Bob Dylan? Just kidding.
Well, I mean, and the Beatles, you know, they transcend generations. So.
Yes, there you go.
I was actually just talking to an acquaintance this morning who was saying that, you know, he thinks the 20-somethings now are listening to or more into the Beatles than maybe some of the older people are.
That could be. So. That could be. We'll hear a little bit more music and continue our conversation and welcome our phone calls. We have a lot going on. 800-486-86. 655 is our number, 800-486-8655. We have a returned Peace Corps volunteer who was in the very first wave of Peace Corps, 1964 to 1966. We have a Gen Xer who grew up in the 80s and 90s, is a dissertator in the English department at UW-Madison. And we also have a millennial who graduated from Riverside High School in Milwaukee and also from Northwestern and is a freelance journalist. Two more calls in a moment. A little bit of music to take us in. And this is, I heard these people for the first time yesterday. I am really getting an education. And I kind of like them. So a little bit of Marky Mark, if you wonder what people are listening to. This is sort of, it's 1991, kind of hip hop and diverse.
Wahlberg, by the way.
What's that?
That's Mark Wahlberg, by the way.
Mark Wahlberg, exactly.
Yep.
He had a switch of careers.
Yep.
I learned that about him
apparently
as well. So here's a little bit of Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. And then we will start taking more phone calls. Can you, I love saying this, Marky Mark on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yo, it's about that time to bring forth the rhythm and the rhyme. I'ma get mine, so get yours. I wanna see sweat coming out your pores. On the house, tip the sound, swinging this. Strictly hip hop, boy, I ain't singing this. Bringing this to the entire nation. Black, white, red, brown, feel the vibration. Come on, come on.
Teen Spirit frequently associated Nirvana as the group with Generation X. What do you think, Kevin? Do you identify with that music? Do you?
Well, what's funny is, you know, with this and with Vanilla Ice and with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, unfortunately, I still remember all of the lyrics to these songs.
Do you really?
Yeah. Vanilla Ice would have been freshman year in high school, and it was on as much as it needed to be for me to remember it here 25 years later.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Culture is funny. You just, you know, once it gets in there, it's hard to get it out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And we do remember those songs we grew up with. We really do remember those, don't we? Let's go back to phone calls and to Wildflower, who's a baby boomer. Hi, Wildflower.
Hi. I have a kind of unique situation that I have an intergenerational tea group, meaning that we are not tea partiers. We are a group of women that for over 10 years have met to discuss social issues and our families and what have you.
Nice.
And we have, I'm the 60-year-old, and we have a 70-year-old, and we have an 80-year-old, which would be Steve Paulson's mother, Lisa. And we live in little town Plymouth, Wisconsin, and we all have been activists and diverse religions, and our children have all grown up that way, and we see some very interesting trends in what our children have done to the reaction of having very activist parents. Several of our children have become lawyers. My daughter, who, although she grew up in a small town, actually was we had an exchange student that went to Riverside, and she taught dance at an inner city school in Milwaukee, where she was the only white student there, but she taught dance there. And now she's in L.A., where she teaches yoga to very wealthy people, but then she works with very impoverished kids, working with autistic kids. And my other daughter works in environmental issues, doing sustainable farming, and I'm involved in environmental issues. I've been part of the peace movement. My kids were in the peace movement when they were in my bellies. I was carrying protest signs with them. So I think that we can see a great variety of people, even in rural towns.
Yeah, thank you so much, Wildflower. What a nice group that sounds like. Somebody ought to film you. I'm wondering if we all have friends, if most of our friends and most of the people who are really close to you in your lives have to be from your generation, or if it's possible, Judy, for you to have really deep friendships with millennials and with Generation Xers. And then the third part of that question is, would that be a good thing?
Of course it would be good. I think I do have friends in all of those areas. Right now, some of my closest friends, I guess they'll be in the next generation, are my two grandchildren, I spend lots and lots of time with. And, you know, that's a whole nother generation that has many challenges ahead of it. And so, but no, I think it's real important to have friends of all generations.
Kevin, do you?
Well, I've been lucky enough to my job is as a teacher here at UW. So I've been able to, for the last, 10 years, been able to teach kids who are 18 to 22. And, as the line from Dazed and Confused goes, I keep getting older, but they stay the same age. So I've been able to, learn a lot about, how they're seeing the world. We have great discussions about the issues that matter to them and how they react to the world around them. And I have no problem at all connecting with their points of view. I don't feel as though there's a unbridgeable gap or anything like that. It's pretty easy, I think, to sit down and have conversations and bring up different points of view in a way that kind of works together.
Yeah. So. And Jabril, how about you?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think what we can take from our last caller is that everything in the generations that come, stems from the generation before, and that there are people of all ages that that want to do something, something good and want to make positive change. And those people are very easy to get along with, no matter the age difference between. Mm-hmm. So, yes, definitely. And I think it's important to have those relationships because, sometimes I think some of the people who have been activists in their past and have gotten a little bit older look then to the younger generations because of the energy and some of the passion that they have to continue what they started.
Yeah, absolutely. One more call. Eric from Generation X. Hi, Eric.
I guess I'm Generation X. I'm not sure who those bands you're talking about are. I don't know who Michael K. Fox, Kirk Cameron, or Ricky Schroeder is. But all I do know is, speaking of diversity, a few years ago I had a girlfriend and our younger sister were about 10 years younger than us, and we were talking about movies that defined our generation. I said, definitely Breakfast Club. Yeah. And our little sister looked at us and said that the movies that defined their generation, it's a half a generation later, was Clueless and Booty Call.
Sad. Are you out to change the world at all, Eric?
Me? I changed the world. I guess I've been accused of becoming a quote-unquote feminist lately. And
I think that's a good thing.
A little step at a time, because I started listening to other people and stopped being so one-sided on things and listen to both sides of things. I think that's going away, but I think that's important for people to do.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. Well, this was just a wonderful hour. Thank you so much. I wish we could all just go have a cup of coffee, but we can't because we're in different places, but we'd have a good conversation. Thank you very, very much to our Madison people. Thank you, Judy, so much for
being
with us. I hope we can meet
in person.
Enjoyed
being here.
Yeah, I did too. Kevin, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Thanks. It was great. And Jabril, thank you very much as well. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? I think the idea worked to do generations and what their hopes and dreams are and what events have taken place in their lifetimes that have inspired them and made them, gave them a call to action and made them worried as well. Thanks very much to Marika Saval for producing the show with help from KP Whaley. And thanks also to Lisa Nalbandian for doing production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We'll be with you again tomorrow talking about somebody who definitely was an activist. The ultimate book on Cesar Chavez tomorrow at 2. The Crusades of Cesar Chavez will be what we'll be talking about tomorrow during this time period. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is the Ideas Network.
Are the wheels still in spin? And there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser